You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 17th of December 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Good day, Matt. How are you doing?
I've been shoveling snow all morning, so I'm in an excellent mood. I love the snow. I love the winter. This is the first major snow of the year here in Western Pennsylvania, and I am not complaining.
Beautiful, beautiful. So you could be in for a white Christmas then, Matt. Is that actually going to happen, do you think, to you this year?
I can't remember the last time we had a white Christmas, but there's actually a very good chance of it, I think.
Well, that's fantastic. That is good. I do like a bit of good news to start the show with. Today we're going to be talking about America's economic war on the rest of the world. And I have to admit, economics is not my strong point, particularly not currency manipulation, which we're going to be talking about today. And I guess a lot of the listeners are probably like myself, and it's not a subject they really know that much about. So before we really get into the quotes, I just want to get some definitions down of what we're going to be talking about here. So, and the first one is appreciation of currency. Now, what does appreciation of currency mean, Matt?
But when you talk about that, you're referring to the value of your currency going up. Consider the dollar or the yuan or anything else like any other commodity. When there's a greater demand for it, value goes up. And the same thing for depreciation.
What would create the greater demand for it, though?
If you have, you know, often a very strong economy is one of the big ones, where there's, you know, tremendous demand for your currency. The U.S. doesn't have a problem because, at least for now, it's the reserve currency of the world. So it's for now. So it remains stable. It's just like any other commodity. If there's more of a demand for the currency, if there's, you know, tremendous economic activity, it's going to strengthen. The result of that, of course, it's able to control inflationary pressure, so the economy doesn't overheat, as we say. But what's happening, we're talking about today, is the notion of either, you know, deliberately increasing or decreasing the value of the currency and what that's supposed to do. Technically, the U.S. hates that kind of thing. So depreciation only refers to the value of your currency, just like any other commodity, any other object that's bought and sold out there.
So if they introduce more money into flotation, more money into circulation, then that is going to depreciate the currency. And if you take some of the money out of circulation, that's going to cause a currency appreciation. Is that correct?
Yes. If that's what the central bank does, that's what's going to happen. It's not the only thing that affects you know, printing money isn't the only thing that affects the value of the currency, but that's the most basic way to understand it.
And is the natural way for it to happen is if it's based upon the goods that are produced by the country. So if the country is producing lots of goods, that the currency suddenly it goes up in value because it can be spent on more things. Is that correct?
Yeah, you could print tons of currency if there's a demand for it. If the economy is expanding, if you're producing a lot of things, there's a lot of economic exchange. You know, we use the phrase, you know, absorbing it. The problem is if a country is not doing that, it's in a recession or just flat, and it's still printing current money, it has nowhere to go. It ends up being completely surplus. And that's, you know, one of the foundational causes for inflation. That's exactly what the U.S. is doing now. All of these bailouts, all of these, simply pouring money into the economy with very little production, with very little going on, is extremely unhealthy. It's only a short-term measure, and it may well drive down the value of the dollar. And it's bad enough because countries are getting rid of the dollar as a reserve currency. And what we're going to talk about today is the U.S. reaction to that. And it seems very obscure and very technical, but it is critically important to understanding world politics.
Well, that's great, because that's really helped me to understand this. And I hope that helps the listeners as well, because what we're going to be looking at is actually Vietnam. Using the same law that allowed the U.S. to impose tariffs on billions of dollars worth of Chinese imports, the Trump administration opened an investigation into the trade practices of one of its biggest trading partners, Vietnam. The probe, launched at President Donald Trump's direction and announced by the U.S. Trade Representative's office late on Friday, focuses on two issues. The first is whether Vietnam deliberately undervalued its currency, the dong, thus making its products cheaper abroad and harming U.S. commerce. The probe is based on Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, the same provision the Trump administration used to start a trade war with China and slap Chinese imports with punitive tariffs. Washington also used currency manipulation allegations against China at the height of the trade tensions between the world's two largest economies. Last year, the U.S. designated the trade war rival a currency manipulator, but eventually removed Beijing from the list as the two sides neared a trade truce. Vietnam is now among the 10 biggest trading partners of the U.S., but at the same time, it has the fourth highest trade surplus with it. America's trade deficit with the Asian nation reached nearly $35 billion by July, outpaced only by China, Mexico, and Switzerland. Vietnam has been stuck on the Treasury Department's list of currency manipulators since last year. In August, the Treasury determined that Vietnam had depreciated its currency in a trade case involving tires, saying that the dong had been undervalued by about 4.7% against the dollar. Well, two things about this, Matt. Vietnam is extremely poor, so what are they doing making these accusations against a very poor country anyway? But doesn't this really show that in actual fact that they're starting to do well? So their currency, they need to put more currency in there to compensate for the fact that they're starting to produce more items. Isn't that the case here? Isn't this a little bit mean of America to make these accusations?
It seems that the only real criteria is A, if a country has a trade surplus with the U.S., and B, that it has a state-run central bank. You remember that meme that keeps floating around Facebook that has the list of the non-Rothschild central banks? There's only a couple of countries on there. That's typical illiteracy. That's not. There's far more countries that have state-owned or at least partially state-owned central banks. And Vietnam is one. Switzerland is another. But the notion of currency manipulator, it's in the very law that you just cited. And it's a designation the U.S. gives to any country that's engaging in unfair currency practices by deliberately devaluing their currency, against the dollar, which means the country in question would then be deliberately lowering the value of its own currency for the sake of reducing the cost of exports. And it'll artificially show a reduction in whatever trade deficit they may happen to have. So currency intervention is, a central bank will buy or sell foreign currency in exchange for domestic, with the intention of, influencing the exchange rate, and basic policy. There's a whole lot of reasons for this, though. The law seems to say that if the country is doing too well, therefore it's cheating. But there's a whole lot of reasons for this. Controlling inflation is a big one. International competitiveness is a big one. Basic financial stability is one, which is what Chinese are accused of this every day. And they're saying, well, this is what we do to maintain a currency in a world dominated by the dollar that is extremely unstable. So in most cases, the central bank will weaken its own currency deliberately so as to, so to speak, subsidize exports and raising the price of imports. So they consider that a form of protectionism, and that's why the U.S. condemns it. But they have to prove that this is deliberate, that the only reason they're doing it is to make their exports cheaper and imports higher. And that's very hard to do. Most of the countries that are accused of this, Vietnam included, simply says, you know, you're angry because we're doing well. We're not supposed to be because we have state central banks and a strong state economy. And you're not. So when someone's beating you and someone's growing in strength, really the weakest response is to say they're cheating. And that's exactly what's happening here.
Well, also, if you have a surplus of goods, the price is going to go down on the goods as well. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that they're devaluing the currency. It could just be that they've got a surplus of goods because they've got better at manufacturing, which is what you would expect these countries, these third world countries, to do anyway, is to get better at manufacturing and improve. Well, let's have a look at what the Department of the Treasury have to say. The 2015 Act calls for the Secretary to monitor the macroeconomic and currency policies of major trading partners and conduct enhanced analysis of and engagement with those partners if they meet certain objective criteria that provide insight into possibly unfair currency practices. In this report, the Treasury has reviewed 20 major US trading partners with bilateral goods trade with the United States of at least $40 billion annually, against the thresholds the Treasury has established for these three criteria. Number one, a significant bilateral trade surplus with the United States is one that is at least $20 billion over a 12-month period. This threshold captures a group of trading partners that represented roughly 80% of the value of all trade surpluses with the United States in 2019. It also captures all trading partners with a trade surplus with the United States that is larger than about 0.1% of US GDP. Number two, a material current account surplus is one that is at least 2% of gross domestic product over a 12-month period. This threshold captures a group of economies that accounted for about 86% of the nominal value of current account surpluses globally in 2019. Number three, persistent one-sided intervention occurs when net purchases of foreign currency are conducted repeatedly in at least 6 out of 12 months, and these net purchases total at least 2% of an economy's GDP over a 12-month period. Looking over the last two decades, this quantitative threshold would capture all significant instances of sustained asymmetric foreign exchange purchases by major US trading partners. The Treasury's goal in establishing these thresholds is to identify where potentially unfair currency practices or excessive external imbalances that could weigh on US growth or harm US workers and businesses may be emerging. Well, the first question I've got here is what is a current account surplus? Can you define that and then maybe explain what's going on here? Because I do find it very confusing.
Yeah. An account surplus is the same thing as a trade surplus. You're just measuring it in currency in this case. So when your assets are exceeded by your bills, in other words, you owe more than you own. You own more than you owe, sorry, there's a positive account surplus. That means the rest of the world is essentially borrowing from you. So a surplus increases the country's net assets and increases its wealth in general. So the U.S., of course, owes far more than it possesses, really by a large margin. I think the worst country there, I think it's Belgium, who has a 350% of their GDP is debt. So what you just read here, though, is two things: that when a country is doing well and is doing better against the U.S. and therefore has a trade surplus with the U.S., that by itself is evidence of cheating, especially if it's too high. And then if they're purchasing currency quite a bit, you know, over and over again, or at least 6 out of 12 months. That's also proof. Two of those together are proof of cheating. Well, an account surplus could just simply mean that the economy is doing very well and its export sector is doing very well. And buying, let's say, buying American currency, really what they're talking about here, to raise its value is, you know, simply you have to have dollars to do business with America most of the time. And, of course, Vietnam is a pretty big trade partner of the U.S., bigger than I thought. For a whole lot of reasons, buying dollars is perfectly understandable. The problem is that the U.S. shouldn't be worrying about appreciation. It should be worrying about depreciation. So we've been talking on this show about Russia and China dumping its dollars. The U.S. should be thanking God that places like Vietnam will be buying them so as to raise the value of the dollar, and therefore Vietnam's exports become cheaper. And no one wants to buy American products because they're denominated in dollars. The U.S. complains no matter what's happening. The other big problem the U.S. is talking about here is that the more dollars a country owns, the more leverage it has against the U.S. internationally. China and Russia have such huge trade surpluses. They have so many dollars. They're essentially the bankers to the world right now. Well, that's coming in conflict with the fact that the dollar is allegedly the reserve currency. Well, if Russia and China, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, has all of these dollars, it has tremendous power over the U.S. All they have to do is dump the dollar, and it's no longer a reserve currency, and there's no more demand for it. That could crash the economy and crash it quickly. So a country buying U.S. dollars so it could do business in dollar-denominated things should be something they should be happy about. But it just seems to be if you have a state-centric economy, a state-owned central bank, and you're doing well, you're going to go on this list.
So it's a catch-all clause, basically, to catch out any countries that are doing well, and they should be doing well. They should be entitled to do well and to try out different things and to have different ways of banking. That's their right. That's a sovereign nation's right to do these things. They shouldn't all have to toe the line and make sure they're not doing as well as America. Well, over the four quarters through June 2020, a number of economies have experienced significant expansions in their current account surpluses. And as you just explained, that's their trade surplus, including China, Taiwan, and Vietnam, while other countries, including Germany and Switzerland, have maintained large trade and current account surpluses, which allowed for external asset stock positions to widen even further. The total US goods trade deficit widened to 4.5% of GDP in the second quarter of 2020 from 3.6% of GDP in the first quarter. The current account deficits expanded to 3.5% of GDP in the second quarter, 1.4 percentage points larger than in the first quarter, and the largest US deficit since the final quarter of 2008. The Treasury remains concerned by these persistent and excessive trade and current account imbalances. The Treasury is also concerned by certain economies raising the scale and persistence of foreign exchange intervention to resist appreciation of their currencies. The Treasury continues to press other economies to uphold the exchange rate commitments they have made in the G20, the G7, and at the IMF. All G20 members have agreed that strong fundamentals, sound policies, and a resilient international monetary system are essential to the stability of exchange rates, contributing to strong and sustainable growth and investment. G20 members have also committed to refrain from competitive devaluations and not target exchange rates for competitive purposes. G7 economies, meanwhile, remain committed to market-determined exchange rates, using domestic tools to meet domestic objectives, and consulting closely and cooperating as appropriate with regards to action in foreign exchange markets. IMF members have committed to avoid manipulating exchange rates to gain an unfair competitive advantage over other members. Nevertheless, a number of countries have conducted foreign exchange market intervention in a persistent, one-sided manner that exceeds Treasury criteria pursuant to the Trade Facilitation and Trade Enforcement Act of 2015. These actions occurred mostly during a period of dollar weakness, as countries sought to limit appreciations of their currencies. Over the four quarters through June 2020, four major US trading partners, Vietnam, Switzerland, India, and Singapore, intervened in the foreign exchange market in a sustained asymmetric manner. Two of these economies, Vietnam and Switzerland, exceeded the two other objective criteria established by the Treasury to identify potentially unfair currency practices or excessive external imbalances which could weigh on US growth or harm US workers and firms. I find it interesting here that they say that they're intervening in an asymmetric manner. Why should they have to do exactly the same thing as America? Am I being simple here by expecting them to have to do the same thing as America, Matt? What do you make of these points here that are raised?
No, of course, it's a complete double standard. You know, the U.S. is losing its position as reserve currency, despite any temporary increase in the dollar. No one trusts the American economy. The fact that relatively small countries like this can put such pressure on the dollar shows you just how weak it is. And, you know, ideologically, what's happening is that the U.S. is saying it can't be because of your policies, because you have a state bank and you have a very state-centered or nationalist, more or less, economic policy, and that never works. Therefore, it has to be based on cheating, because we all know that that kind of national socialist economy can never work. But again, they're assuming that this is a deliberate policy. Now, there is a distinction, of course, between balance of payments and foreign exchange, because, you know, one is in goods, the other is in currency, but the two obviously go up and down together. But there's so many things. You know, interest rates really signal the buying or selling of a currency. That clearly affects the value. Inflation does. Basic fiscal monetary policy does. You know, the higher, you know, the American massive debts will devalue the currency, which is the exact opposite of what it looks like Vietnam is trying to do. Speculation. You know, speculators expect a currency to appreciate in value. They'll go out and buy a ton of it. That will cause the exchange rate to rise to the higher demand. And the opposite, if they think it's going to depreciate. Well, the Vietnamese aren't the ones who are doing speculation. Those are bankers in the West. But for the U.S. to talk about currency manipulation, well, the dollar is, at least for now, the standard currency, is laughable. The fact that you're the standard currency is the ultimate manipulation. What's happening is that the U.S. is seeing this fall away. The stronger these economies get, the more dollars they own, the more leverage these countries taken together have against the U.S., the weaker the U.S. is simply going to be. And this is some of the worst situation the U.S. can be in. I mean, Russia's surplus is $25 billion U.S. dollars. China is $196. But, you know, you have Vietnam is something like $8.2 billion. Thailand is $48 billion. It's all over the place. You know, Italy is something like $50. And this means that you take these countries together and, you know, Malaysia is very high. About $6 billion. These countries start working together under the Shanghai Cooperation Organization umbrella. They can very easily push the U.S. out. But if the dollar is pushed out of its reserve status, then the opposite is going to have what they're talking about here. It will depreciate rapidly. But rapid depreciation is not helpful either. So, of course, it's a double standard. They don't want the fact that these small countries can threaten the U.S. to such an extent, because their economies are doing well, alerts them to how exactly weak the American position is. So what they're talking about here is short-term devaluation for the sake of boosting their exports to the U.S. and, of course, the reverse for American imports into their country. That's all this is. They can't handle any more debt, and this is a banker's concern. It's not a major issue because it's too technical, but this is the result of American capitalists, not these foreign countries. All the victimizer is trying to blame the victim is what this comes down to.
So as soon as they start doing well, America accuses them of being currency manipulators. The U.S. Treasury Department has designated Vietnam and Switzerland as currency manipulators while placing China, India, and several other countries on its monitoring list. The currency manipulator designation is based on three criteria: a $20 billion plus trade surplus with the U.S., current account surplus exceeding 2% of GDP, and currency intervention exceeding 2% of GDP. Both Switzerland and Vietnam meet the criteria, with the latter boasting a trade surplus of a whopping $57 billion, which has triggered repeated accusations from Washington that it is deliberately undervaluing its currency. Switzerland, which was added to the monitoring list in January, has also reacted to the designation, with the Swiss National Bank promising to continue its aggressive monetary policies, regardless of US pressure, and saying it does not engage in any form of currency manipulation. China, which was labelled a currency manipulator last August amidst the heated trade war with the US, remains on the monitoring list. Beijing's designation, which was not backed by the IMF, was withdrawn earlier this year, days before it reached a trade deal with Washington. Well, that really just shows that that's all this is, doesn't it? Because if Switzerland is saying, look, we don't engage in this currency manipulation, and the IMF is not backing up America's accusations of this, then, I mean, what else can it be other than America just doesn't like the fact that these other countries are doing well while America is not doing well, and they're using this dodgy law in order to enforce their will on the rest of the world. So this is why we say this is economic warfare against the rest of the world. What do you make of what Switzerland has to say here, Matt?
Well, you're absolutely right. And usually when you think of American accusations against countries, Switzerland would probably be the last one because they're, you know, not exactly enemies of the U.S. However, Switzerland does have a central bank. I think about 55% is owned by the state, the specific cantons and other state actors. The rest is private. So it's a slight majority that the state owns. And because of this, they could claim that there's some kind of political machinations behind the tactic. But it's not as if there's not benefits to a strong currency. Because if your currency is strong, if it's appreciating, the price of imports falls. So living standards could increase. Firms can benefit from lower prices of imported goods. Same thing for raw materials coming into the country. It gives you an incentive to become more efficient because it makes exports less competitive. It creates a incentive for exporters to try to become increasing productivity. It also, you know, forces countries to look inward. They want to diversify into less, you know, elastic, less price sensitive exports. And of course, it will keep inflation in check. All this is a short-term panic of businesses, you know, huge multinational corporations who think that they're in trouble, despite the fact that, you know, a strong currency can benefit the country tremendously. But this is about short-term profits, and everything seems to be short-term when it comes to this stuff, especially when you have high debts. Private sector debt is far higher than government. And as always, because these institutions are stronger than the U.S. government, they simply use the U.S. government as its bodyguard. And that's all this is. Now, what they're going to do about this is another matter. You know, whether it be sanctions or whatever at all, I can't imagine sanctioning Switzerland. But the U.S. has been trying to open up the Swiss banking system for a very long time. But you know, they've only been partially successful. That's partially what's going on here. But all these countries have all of that in common. They have a strong state sector. They have a strong state central bank. They're doing very well. They own a lot of dollars, and they have a lot of, despite their size, they have a lot of influence in international politics for that reason. This is no different than regular conventional warfare, except that rather than dead bodies, you have people out of work.
Well, Switzerland has a very good reputation for its banking. Let's see if we've got time to have a look at the actual law here, and this is a piece from 2007. For decades, the United States, a self-professed evangelist for free trade, has been paranoid about other nations manipulating the exchange value of their currencies for trade advantage, with counterproductive distortions in global free trade. Such apprehension has even been institutionalized into law. Section 3004 of Public Law 100-418 requires, inter alia, the Secretary of the Treasury to analyze annually the exchange rate policies of foreign countries in consultation with the IMF, and to consider whether countries manipulate the rate of exchange between their currency and the US dollar for purposes of preventing effective balance of payments adjustment or gaining unfair competitive advantage in international trade. Section 3004 further requires that if the Secretary considers such manipulation occurring in countries such as Japan and China that have material global current account surpluses and have significant bilateral trade surpluses with the US, the Secretary of the Treasury shall take action to initiate negotiations with such foreign countries on an expedited basis in the IMF or bilaterally for the purpose of ensuring that such countries regularly and promptly adjust the rate of exchange between their currencies and the dollar to permit effective balance of payment adjustments and to eliminate any unfair advantage. Section 3005 requires, inter alia, the Secretary of the Treasury to provide each 6 months a report on international economic policy, including exchange rate policy. The reports are to contain the results of negotiations conducted pursuant to Section 3004. Each of these reports bears the title, Report to Congress on International Economic and Exchange Rate Policies. Unfortunately, the underlying implication of the law assumes erroneously that current account surpluses can be by themselves evidence of currency manipulation by the surplus country. In fact, as trade imbalances are the structural effects of fundamentals in the terms of trade, attempts to correct them with exchange rate adjustments are by definition currency manipulation. Exchange rate policies cannot be substitutes for structural economic adjustments necessary for mutually beneficial trade between two economies. Nor can exchange rate policies be substitutes for sound domestic monetary or economic policy. When two economies are at uneven stages of development trade, a trade surplus in favour of the less developed economy is natural and just until the less developed economy catches up with the more developed one. Otherwise, it would be imperialist exploitation and not trade. So they're breaking the law in the first place by expecting these countries to manipulate their currencies to benefit America. Is that right?
That's exactly what he's saying here, that this very condemnation is a form of manipulation. But that another big thing here I was going to say a second ago, if you have a non-state central bank, something that the U.S. can manipulate, a speculator like George Soros can attack the currency like he did in 1997 in Asia, and hedge funds are doing the same kind of thing, that could quickly drain the government's foreign exchange reserve. It could collapse the economy. One of the reasons that the U.S. is so vehemently opposed to state central banks in these parts of the world is that speculators can't necessarily make a fortune on them. When George Soros crashed the Asian economies, the economies that didn't have a private central bank, China and Taiwan, survived, had no problems. Only those that had a freely floating system, privately owned central bank, were damaged and forever damaged. And that's what's happening here. George Soros is demanding that the U.S. take action against state central banks for this very reason. They can't make the profits that they would otherwise.
So we got Soros making an appearance there as well. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.